A treasure trove of CIA files about UFO sightings across the planet has been published online. The dossier is bursting with hundreds of declassified records containing once top secret information on unidentified aerial phenomena. Known as the Black Vault from our friend John Greenwald, this information is coming out containing what the CIA claims is all about documents on unidentified objects. Fascinating work. In a moment, Tim Schwartz joins us. We'll be talking about his latest work on UFOs, abductions, and time travel on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Tim Schwartz back with us. Tim is an Emmy Award-winning television producer, videographer, and is the author of a number of popular books, including Tim R. Schwartz's Big Book of Incredible Alien Encounters. As a photojournalist, he has traveled extensively, investigated paranormal phenomena and other unusual mysteries from such diverse locations as the Great Pyramid in Egypt, the Great Wall of China. He is a writer and editor of the online newsletter Conspiracy Journal, which is a free weekly email newsletter considered essential reading by paranormal researchers worldwide. Tim is also the host of the webcast Exploring the Bizarre, along with Timothy Green Beckley on KCOR Radio, currently.com. Currently, Tim writes a column about high strangeness in Indiana for the magazine Day Drifter as well. Tim, welcome back. It's been a year, and I hope your year is okay.
Thank you, George. It's always a pleasure to be with you. And, we're surviving. 2020 is gone, so we're keeping our fingers crossed that 2021 is going to be maybe a little better.
We need it. I think everybody needs a boost, don't you, Tim?
Yes, I certainly do.
Hey, the story I had before you came on about John Greenwald's Black Vault, digging up more and more files, something's going on out there in the UFO community in a very positive way. Don't you feel it?
I do. But, you know, I try to keep my excitement down because, you know, as you well know, George, I mean, I've been involved in researching UFOs for many, many years. I can't even remember how long I've been doing it. And it seems like every couple of years there's some new excitement that, you know, it's going to be some new groundbreaking UFO revelations or disclosure, or, you know, the UFOs are actually going to land on the White House lawn. But so far, it's never happened.
True.
So when I hear news like this, I keep my fingers crossed that, something's going to happen, but, so far, we've all been kind of disappointed. It seems like that this kind of information comes down to us really in drips. You know, nothing ever comes out full force. It's just a little bit here and a little bit there. And I think that eventually maybe these drips will produce an ocean of information. But until that time, I think that we really just have to be patient.
Tim, I had Steve Bassett on Monday from the Paradigm Research Group, of course, always pushing for disclosure. Mm-hmm. And he believes that there's going to be congressional hearings soon. What do you think of that?
Well, considering everything else that's going on right now in Washington and with our government, more than likely any kind of congressional information on UFOs, it's really going to fall to the wayside. And that always seems to happen. I mean, you get some congressmen, some senators who become interested in UFOs, and then some either national or international crisis happens, and that falls to the wayside. So, you know, once again, I'm not going to hold my breath to see this happen. It would be nice. But I guess at this point in my life, I'm a little bit
skeptical.
Pessimistic as well. That anything is going to happen in any big rush.
How did your interest in UFOs come about?
Well, with me, it started like with a lot of other people. You know, at a fairly early age. Though I at first was not interested in UFOs, but I was given an assignment around third grade to do a news report in front of the classroom about UFOs. This would have been 1967, 1968, somewhere along those lines. And there had been a small UFO flap going on across the United States. And so there, believe it or not, there was actually, you know, newspaper reports. You don't see that very often anymore. And so I had no idea what UFOs were. I mean, you know, third grade kid. I was more interested in the Indianapolis 500 and basketball. You know, typical Indiana, you know, kid type of interest. So, you know, I gave this presentation, and then that was it for me. Everybody, you know, in my school, I was the flying saucer guy. You know, I was the guy who believed in a little bit green men from Mars. And all that, even though, again, I was not that interested. But what was interesting to me was that, you know, people would make fun of you and then come back later and say, you know, I don't believe in this kind of stuff, but... And then they'd proceed to tell me a story, you know, they were on vacation and their family saw a UFO. You know, somebody saw their dead grandmother appear at the foot of their bed.
Mm-hmm.
Stories like that. And that's really what drug me into all this, were all of these different stories that people were telling me that they weren't interested in telling anybody else, really, or getting publicity or things like that. They just had a weird experience that they had no idea how to classify it, how to put it away in their brain as to what happened with them. And I think a lot of people... They have these unusual experiences, and they don't know who to talk to about it. You know, it throws a lot of people through a loop because it's such a weird, out of the place experience compared to, you know, your daily normal activities. So, you know, I've offered over the years really a shoulder for these people to cry on and to tell their stories, and for a lot of them, that's all they need. You know, they just want somebody to listen to them and tell them that, yeah, you know, you're not crazy. Other people have had these types of experiences. We don't know what's going on, but I believe that you actually had this experience. And for a lot of people, that's all they need. You know, you can almost see the weight lifted off their shoulders after they tell, and they may never tell anybody else ever again, but all they needed was somebody just to tell them that, you know, I'm not going to laugh at you. I believe that that you had a real experience, and that's enough. And to me, that's the most fascinating thing about all of these phenomena, whether it be UFOs, ghosts, cryptid creatures, is that people are seeing and experiencing something, but and like I said before, most of them they really don't want any kind of publicity. They just want to know that they're not crazy.
Absolutely. Now, over the years that you've been involved in this, what was the first episode that got you fascinated with ufology?
Oh my gosh. You know, one of the first episodes that really got my interest was, and this was really early on. I had there was somebody who was in my school that told me about this experience that they had when they had gone out one evening to take the trash out. Now you have to remember that, you know, this was in the late 60s. So taking the trash out meant you would take the trash out to a bin in your backyard to burn it, all right? So this kid was burning this trash, and he said that all of a sudden this star, he said it at first it was a star, swooped down out of the sky and turned into he said it looked like a disc. You know, of course, then, you know, everyone called it a flying saucer. But he said that this flying saucer, so it was glowing bright yellow, hovered overhead, and he said it projected a beam of light down into the trash barrel as it was burning, and he said that this beam of light put the fire out, and then it flew away. And then, you know, he ran in to tell his parents what happened, and he got in trouble because he wasn't burning the trash. And that's really, I mean, you know, here's this kid. I mean, you know, he, like me, no interest in this kind of stuff, yet he had this extremely bizarre experience. And that was really one of the first, you know, I'm not going to say it was a personal case, but, I mean, this was somebody that I knew that came to tell me this story. And, of course, I mean, he was adamant, you know, don't you dare tell anybody else what had happened. You know, they'll make fun of me like they make fun of you. But it's not that uncommon for people to have these kinds of really unusual experiences. Because, I mean, you know, face it, a UFO flying overhead and putting out a fire, you know, you don't hear about cases like that very often, but they happen all the time. People have these experiences every day all over the world, and we never hear about them. The reports that come down to us you know, make it into the media, whether it be mainstream or social or just investigators and researchers talking back and forth to each other, is probably 1% of all the actual cases that happen to people worldwide.
Minuscule.
Yes, extremely minuscule, you know, and we're really lucky that we get that 1%.
You have looked at the possibilities of UFOs trying to hurt people and vice versa. What have you unraveled there?
Oh, sure. Well, you know, Timothy Green Beckley and myself, I mean, we've written a book previously called UFO Hostility, and that book was overflowing with cases of people being injured either intentionally or unintentionally by UFOs. And then, you know, the one that we're currently working on, and it's, you know, probably will be finished and published at the 1st of February, which we're calling it Alien Lives Matter, It's Okay to Be Gray. That one deals more with the flip side, where people have intentionally attacked UFOs and oftentimes the creatures that are seen coming out of them. Which
that's not very smart.
Well, it really tends to be, I think, a natural human reaction. I mean, you know, think about the movie The Day the Earth Stood Still. You know, the original one where, you know, the UFO lands in Washington and the alien gets out and he's surrounded by the military. Everybody's got his guns drawn on him. And he pulls out this little device, and some soldier who panics shoots him. And it turns out that the device was like a universal translator, where the president could talk to races all over the galaxy. But that really is a normal reaction to people who come across something just totally unexpected and out of the ordinary for them. I'll give you a very good example. Now, this was told to me by somebody who lives here in Indiana, and he was one evening, he was in a cemetery, a rural cemetery, and he was visiting the gravesite of his parents, and he said that all of a sudden, this bright object suddenly lit up. It was already apparently landed in the line of trees just on the other side of the cemetery. And he said that as he had gotten closer to it, all of a sudden it brightened up and caught him totally by surprise. Out of this bright light came this humanoid figure. He said that it was glowing blue in color, but it looked like a regular person.
Mm-hmm.
And it was walking towards him. And he said as it got closer, he got more and more panicked. And as it was almost upon him, he said that he reached out to hit it or slap it, just to, you know, to hit it, to try to get it away from him. But instead, his hand went right through it, like it was a ghost. But this thing never acknowledged his presence. It just was looking forward. And even after he said then, after his hand went through it, he kicked at it. But his foot went right through it. But this thing just continued to walk past him, just totally oblivious that he was even there, and then vanished behind him. At the same time that it vanished, the bright light behind the trees vanished as well. So, I mean, you know, there is a perfect example of the type of reactions that people have to something extraordinary. They try to hit it, shoot at it, throw rocks at it. You know, that seems to be, unfortunately, a very human response when it comes to something unusual like that. And we have lots and lots of tales of people doing that, military, especially Air Force,
mm-hmm.
Early on shooting at UFOs, and of course, a lot of times there was a very unpleasant response. And of course, the same situation with, you know, individual encounters. You know, sometimes their attacks are ignored. Other times there is a retaliation of various kinds.
The Cisco Grove, California case had to do with aliens in the forest. You looked at that one.
Yeah. That's a fascinating account.
Great witnesses.
It really is. And, you know, to me, one of the things that makes it so fascinating is that, you know, I remember years and years ago reading about this account, but at that point, none of the witness names had come down. You know, it was just this kind of really a nebulous account of this hunter who had found himself lost in the woods overnight, and you know, was attacked, and then he attacked back these strange creatures. But it actually happened in September of 1964 with a gentleman by the name of Donald Shrum. Now, Shrum, along with some friends, were out in the Tahoe National Forest bow hunting for deer, and Shrum actually found himself separated from the group as night was falling, and, you know, I mean, that didn't bother him too much. I mean, they were all very used to being in the woods hunting, but he said that as he was waiting for dayfall to come, he saw a white light in the sky that was zigzagging around the trees at a low altitude and eventually heading towards him.
Hold on for a second, Tim. I'll have you finish that story that I want you to talk about some of your time travel events, too. We'll take your calls with Tim Schwartz next hour as we talk about UFOs. We're going to get into time travel as well and have him finish up his story on the Cisco Grove, California incident, which occurred back there in 1964. Dramatic story all by itself. Welcome back. George Norrie with you. Tim Schwartz with us. Tim's website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Tim, let's finish up the Cisco Grove, California story of aliens in the forest.
Yes, definitely. Well, okay, this bow hunter who had been out with his friends, when night fell, he was unable to rendezvous back at the camp, so he decided that he would just bed down for the night. He had found a rocky clearing and had lit a fire and was waiting for daylight to come when he noticed a light in the sky that was zigzagging through the trees nearby. he thought it was a rescue helicopter, you know, looking for him. So he was throwing brush on the fire to make it flare up and to be more smoky and to try to attract attention. Well, it did attract the attention, and this thing came and landed just below the clearing. When it did, he realized that this wasn't a rescue helicopter. So he decided his best course of action would be to shimmy up a tree and to kind of see what was going on. Well, as he was up in this tree, from the woods came, as he described it, two humanoid figures dressed in silver-colored uniforms. It looked like that they had a hood covering their heads. He couldn't see their faces, but he, you know, they were clearly, you know, human-like in appearance. Well, these creatures came up first to the fire. Stood around the fire looking at it, and then realized that this guy was up in the tree, and they went and stood under the tree looking up at him. Well, he got scared, naturally. So
of course, yeah.
He decided that he would take a book of matches and start lighting matches and throwing them down at these creatures, hoping to scare them away. When they didn't respond to the individual matches, he lit the entire book and threw them down at him. Eventually, he went as far as to light his hat up and set it on fire and throw it down at him. Well, every time that the fire, you know, these bits of fire would come down, they'd move away, but then they would come back. And after he did that, they tried shaking the tree to dislodge him. And when that didn't work, he said that all of a sudden, from the direction of where this craft had been seen to land, he said another creature came out of the woods to join the first two. He said that the third being was robot-like and moved in, he said, less articulated manner than the other two. He said it was about 5 foot tall and dressed in a kind of a metallic uniform. Said its head looked like a helmet, which rested directly on its shoulders, and its eyes glowed a reddish orange that partially lit up its face. Now, this thing came up underneath the tree, and he said that its jaw would drop open. He likened it to like how a ventriloquist dummy looks. You know, when it opens its mouth, it's just like this square opening that just, you know, dropped open in its face. He said that a gray smoke or mist came out of this creature's mouth up into the tree, which Strum said that it made him dizzy and he would lose consciousness, but only briefly. And he said that he'd wake up, he's still in the tree, and this would be repeated several times. Finally, he had enough of it, and he had his bow and arrow up there with him in his backpack. And so he said that he managed to shoot several arrows at this creature, but he said that every time that he had managed to hit, and he had the metal tip arrows, I should add, every time that they would hit this robot-like creature, he said that sparks would fly like it was hitting, you know, like metal upon metal. And this continued most of the night until finally he ran out of arrows. And after he ran out of arrows, then a second robot joined the group. And two of them were trying to gas him down out of this tree. And each time that the gas, again, would hit him, he'd lose consciousness for, you know, a brief amount of time, but then come to. He said finally after the last incident, he woke up, the sun was coming up, and all the creatures were gone, and he managed to get down and make it back to camp, where his friends were waiting for him, naturally concerned. But they, too, had seen this light flying around in the sky. Of course, when they reported this incident, nobody believed him.
No, not at the time.
No. I mean, you know, 1960, what the heck? I mean, you know, even now, when reports like this are made, naturally enough, you know, oh, yeah, yeah, sure, you know, or, you know, think the guy is crazy. But, you know, fortunately, this case was recorded, and the incident was taken down in detail because Shrum's mother-in-law told an astronomer friend from a local college who in turn had contacted the McClellan Air Force Base. Now, Shrum agreed to allow two officers to question him in an empty house at an off-base housing development. Now, how's that for clandestine reporting? So the two officers told Shrum that they believed what he was telling him, but that obviously he was remembering it wrong. They suggested, now get this, George, that instead of UFO aliens, Shrum had been harassed by a group of teenagers playing a prank, or perhaps a group of lost Japanese tourists.
Jeez.
So I love the ending of that. And can you just imagine the frustration of this man who went through this bizarre, you know, potentially dangerous experience? Being told that, yeah, you know, it was just a bunch of Japanese tourists who just somehow managed to try to gas you down out of this tree. But, you know, it does make you wonder, though, if this incident would have transpired the way it did if he hadn't tried first, you know, attacking first, throwing, you know, like matches and you know, burning clothing down at them, if they just would have looked at him and walked away, or if that was the thing, you know, that's what saved him, that he was able to defend himself, you know, using his bow and arrow and things like that. You know, we'll never know, but it does seem like that a lot of times when people attack UFOs and the occupant scene coming out of them, a lot of times there is some kind of retaliation. You know, people always talk about, or you know, some of the, say, like contactees
mm-hmm.
with UFOs talk about, oh, you know, they're sweetness and light and here to save us and to teach us the ways of peace and love in the universe, but they don't seem to react that way if a person attacks them first. They're all too willing to defend themselves.
We seem to be having a tremendous difference in UFO cases, Tim, from the old days mm-hmm. where we had landing pads, pods, and things like that. We don't see that anymore.
No, and that's one of the curious things about the whole UFO phenomena is that you'll get a certain kind of phenomena for, you know, maybe a decade, you know, sometimes longer than that, and then it changes. Right now, we don't get nearly the reports of occupant sightings or really even UFOs landing. Right now, it seems to be more lights in the sky, orbs, things like that. In the 1950s, we got all kinds of UFO sightings with occupants coming out. I'm thinking particularly in 1954, when you had this huge flap of UFOs with occupants in Belgium and France and
mm-hmm.
Places in Europe, which then spread across the globe, including the United States and especially also South America, but we don't see reports like that.
Not a lot.
I don't want to say anymore. Because, you know, things change very, very, very rapidly. But the phenomena does seem to change for some reason over a period of time.
Tell me about some of these time travel stories you've come across.
Oh, gosh. You know, every time that, you know, I'm on your show, George, and talk about these things, I get new emails from people telling me their, especially time slip experiences. And, you know, time slips are really fascinating because people seem to actually have an experience where they not only will... It seems like that they see a different time period, but a lot of people also physically experience it. I mean, it's not just like somebody's having a vision of something that happened into the past. It's like that they're actually there. And I ran across, you know, just I want to mention this one because I just ran across this one, this case this evening. While I was researching to do your show. Now, this one happened back in 1954 near Lake Crater in Oregon. And the report said that a mother and daughter and several children were driving in a hilly area and got lost when they came across a large circular structure that was brightly lit at the side of the road. They said that their car engine stalled, and they coasted to what they thought was a parking lot of a restaurant. They said they all went inside, and the place had walls like mirrors, plexiglass tables, and windows in the ceilings. Said that the people inside this restaurant, I put the quotation marks around that, were all blonde and about 4.5 feet tall and dressed in silvery uniforms and boots. The uniforms had some kind of emblem on them. So it says that the mother and their children sat at a table, and they were brought food, which they ate. The beings had soft musical voices, and then later they said that when they tried to pay for their food, they were dissuaded. They didn't want money. They said that later when the witnesses returned to the site. The building or UFO, whatever you want to call it, had disappeared. So, we're left with, okay, did these people have a UFO experience? Did they have a time slip experience? Or maybe a little bit of all of the above? I find that just really a fascinating case because you wouldn't think that if you believe in the extraterrestrial hypothesis of UFOs, that a UFO with scientists and explorers would land and then serve dinner to people just happen to run across them. But then again, stranger things have happened when it comes to the UFO phenomena.
Some people, Tim, think that these are demonic. What do you think about that?
This has been a theory that's been around for quite some time. You know, I remember, George, as a kid, I ran across a book that was written by a minister, that, and this would have been in the 1970s, and that was this minister's hypothesis, that the whole UFO phenomena was actually a confirmation from the Book of Revelation. That said that in the end times that Satan and his angels would appear to man as as angels of light.
Well, that was Barry Downing, I think.
No, it wasn't Barry Downing. I guess I'm trying to remember.
He wrote a book in '68 called The Bible and Flying Saucers.
Right. Yeah, and that one is different. You know, this one is something like, I can't remember exactly. I think maybe the author's last name may have been Wilson, but don't quote me on that. But no, I mean, this book was very much, you know, UFOs, their occupants, they're Satan and demons. You can't trust them. You know, they say they're from outer space, but actually they're here to steal your souls.
They're going to eat you.
Yeah, definitely. But you know, that's a theory that hasn't gone away. Dick Redfern wrote a very good book a few years back that talked about how In the Pentagon, there had been this a group that had been formed to study the UFO phenomena that eventually it turned into a group who believed that UFOs were demonic and satanic, and that people like Aleister Crowley had actually opened up a wormhole or portal, whatever you want to call it, that allowed these things into our universe under the guise of aliens. You know, this group had actually gone as far as to recommend that the United States become a very severe theocracy.
Interesting. Nick, hold on for a second. Tim, we're going to come back and take phone calls from people all over the place next.